Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I am so Dara. I'm extra Dara. I am so happy to be here today. So, hey, did you do something with your turkey leftovers? Did you cram them into a pot? Are you making good turkey stock? That is something that'll hold you for months. I have a giant, ridiculously big enameled pot, and I don't use it that many times a year, but I do use it for turkey stock. House smells good. That is a joy. All right, so I have fun people here today. I have Kate Sidoti. She just opened her first restaurant. We got an inspiring story of a lady who wants us to eat well. Later on, I got Tig Nelson from Pajarito. Their second anniversary, that kind of forward-looking Mexican place in St. Paul, and they're bringing in some really famous chef from Milwaukee, this guy Justin Carlisle. We've got Mr. Andrew Zimmern come back on the show, and he's going to talk to us about Taste of the NFL. So we just got all the good stuff. So settle in, get all your turkey leftovers kind of sorted. Maybe you're going to freeze some. Maybe you're going to portion them out into the lunch meat parts and the soup parts. I like it. We'll visit through this hour. All right. So first off, I've got Kate Sidoti here. She grew up in Hopkins, possibly, not Minneapolis, and then kind of, you know, just opened this restaurant 2 months ago, right by the shores of Lake Bidé-Makaska, former Lake Calhoun. And she brought in all these great things. I'm feeling a little under the weather, so I'm not getting to try them, but they look so good. Kate, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right, so tell me about you. You grew up in Hopkins.
Hopkins, yeah. I grew up family in Hopkins and then kind of did some traveling after.
I think of the Crossroads Deli. That's like my first.
Crossroads.
Yeah, I love big latkes and some matzo ball soup. It's so fun to be there.
Yeah.
So you grew up in that part of the world. And then when did you, tell me about you. When did you fall in love with food? When did you decide to do that?
Oh, I think it was my family, totally entrenched. We were the kind of family that over breakfast we're talking about what we're making for dinner. And it was always revolved around dinner time, family cooking. My brother loved making Thai. So we each had our own kind of what can we bring to the table. And
oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
And then you went to New York City.
Big city, yeah. Went to culinary school in New York, and I knew that I had two passions. It was health and wellness and cooking. So this school was based on how do you create really good foods that are healthy, nutritious, but not.
Yeah, when I think we hear about people going to New York, it's always for the French Culinary Institute, but you went for
Natural Gourmet Institute.
Okay. And so that has some, like, how would you describe the National Gourmet Institute? I've heard of some chefs that have come out of there.
Yeah, really plant forward and progressive. We know how to make a vegan creme brulee, but not necessarily the traditional style. So it was taking really natural ingredients and how do you thicken with agar-agar or seaweed, or how do you mimic the look and feel of something that should be highly sugared, but take natural sugars and reduce it down, or use dates to sweeten a cake. So
are you a vegetarian, or you just know how to cook vegetarian?
I know how to cook vegetarian. I'm about if you crave meat, have a little bit, good quality, well humanely raised, and it doesn't have to be so constricting or have so many rules. I think you had Chef Alex of Brasa.
Oh, sure.
On, and his whole philosophy of the 80-20, you know, like 80% of your time have really good quality made from scratch foods and room and flexibility for fun and life and enjoyment.
Absolutely. That is what I am all about. All right, so I got a question for you. You opened your Brim restaurant. It's right kind of on the edge of Uptown by kind of a like kitty corner almost from like Padae Makuska. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the place, your dream. Like that's been a difficult place. A few things have come and gone out of there, but you wanted to be close to the lake?
Yeah, so my husband and I about 10 months ago had this idea of I had been a caterer and private chef and like moved back to Minnesota after we met. And what can we do? What's the next step? And it actually happens to be a space opened up a block away from our little apartment. And
you live in the neighborhood.
Yeah, live in the neighborhood. Nice. You can see the front door from our front door. So it's that space. We met near Padae Makuska.
You did?
Yeah, we were both on a run. And we were at the same stoplight. And he smiled at me. And I was like, how is he so pretty smiling, running. So we ran around Lake of the Isles, and we live a block away from where we kind of finished our run and exchanged numbers. So that space.
That is such a good, healthy meeting story.
So the restaurant is definitely the heart and soul of our life, yeah, together.
Oh, interesting. And So there's so many of the kind of grain bowl restaurants. That's not exactly what you're doing. You're doing something else. Like, we're really familiar in the Skyways at this point. You know, it's a quinoa bowl and you add poached egg or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you're doing something else.
Yeah, that's really sweet that you acknowledge that we're so proud of how we source everything. Like, we get our wild rice from Red Lake Nation. So I call the reservation about once every other week, and they courier down their amazing wild rice. Like, it smells like the Minnesota shores.
That's quinoa, fantastic.
Yeah, it's super special, and it's just like you don't have to do much to it. You just like, we like treasure every single ounce of it. So
yeah, Minnesota wild rice is one of the kind of overlooked national treasures. I mean, I would, in my personal pantheon, it is one of my absolute favorite foods. It is the hand harvested real lake wild rice from our clean lakes and rivers. So great.
It's phenomenal. Yeah, it's something really magical. It's just like so precious. But we try to get all of our ingredients with that much integrity. And our quinoa, we call a farm in Colorado. And Virginia answers the phone like, oh, there's got a lot of drought here. I don't know. You better order 50 pounds this week because I don't know how it's going to be next week. So it's. Yeah, we're fast casual, but everything is made and sourced really thoughtfully. So I think you can taste that in the food and the freshness. And then our produce is from Shared Grounds Co-op. So they source it from Hispanic-run and owned farms. And if they can't get something from that circle, it's Hmong-run farms. And then sort of the third tier is larger cooperative organic farms. So between the produce, the grains, and the meats. It's all very.
So you're doing that to be ethical, but I've got to imagine that also you're getting a higher quality product to work with.
The less you can have it in transport, the fresher, the more flavorful, and the more nutritious, because it's from ground to the bowl at Brim. It's really tight time frame. So
very cool. And so tell me about the places. You brought in some beautiful foods. Avocados and your great, this kind of pork bowl, things like this. Mm-hmm. But tell me about kind of creating a third space, because it's not just you have some great food, but you also kind of trying to make it an all day thing, right?
Yeah, we start lunch at dinner. I think towards the spring when you get around the lakes more often, we'll open to breakfast. But lunch and dinner felt like first restaurant, first space, let's just get everything right and go from there. We have a beer and wine, so kind of a cozy, quick dinner is kind of our spot. Yeah.
Fun. So does all your family come in from Hopkins? Or they come?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. My brother came from Duluth when we didn't have a dishwasher the first couple days. We like rolled up his sleeves. It's been definitely a full family affair to get it up and running this past 2 months.
Oh, so sweet. All right. So I've been talking to Katie Sidoti from Brim, a new place in in Uptown. What do we say? It's on the edge of right by the lakes
right by
there.
The lake.
It's I'm just so always happy to see a new restaurant, a new dream coming together.
Yeah.
Young entrepreneur. Very inspiring. All right, everybody, go check it out. It's Brim. It's on the edge of Uptown. It's some good sourcing, some healthy foods. Katie, thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much. This is a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. When we come back, I think I'm going to get to the text line, talk to y'all about your leftovers. So you got something to share with me? 81807. Dara here. All right. We're in the aftermath of Thanksgiving. Are you just have all of your china still out? Are you making, you know, your turkey stock? What else you got? So we're going to have a minute for a few questions here, and then we're going to come back with Mr. Tig Nelson from Pajarito. But I got a question. Someone's going out of town, has a lot of mashed potatoes. What to do? You know, you can freeze them. Actually, mashed potatoes, if they have a fair amount of fat in them, they will freeze pretty well. And then when you come back, you can make boxty, which is like mashed potato cakes with different things in it. You can just have them straight up. You can do all kinds of things. All right, so I got a question. Leftover turkey pasta, someone wants to use it as a filling, a pasta filling. That's an ambitious cooking project. I respect that. Absolutely, you can use leftover turkey inside a tortelloni or something. That would be some deluxe leftovers, I'll tell you what. Oh, I got a question about too many salad greens, overbought salad greens, not know how to get through them all. You know, here's something people don't think about. You can saute them. You can just put some garlic in a hot pan, get that all going, throw your salad greens, all your big bag of baby greens in there. Squeeze some lemon over it, you know, toss it all around. And that is a very good side dish. And you'll be amazed. You take a giant bag of greens. Next thing you know, you just have a small portion of hot greens to eat. It's a it's a delightful, delightful, delightful. All right, I got a question. Am I pro pie for breakfast? What, do you not even know me? I am the most pro pie for breakfast person you're going to meet. I am all about pie for breakfast. I am also just, you know, pie for lunch. Why are we depriving ourselves? You got one turnaround, one chance on this wonderful world, and you should make the most of it. And that includes pie for breakfast. All right. We're kind of going to come back here on WCCO. We're going to have Tig Nelson from Pajarito, and we're going to talk about all the good things that are coming up there. Celebrity chefs, fanciness. It's going to be a good time. What do my wondering eyes behold? It's Tig Nelson from Pajarito. Tig and I have been through some wars together. We were on the stage at the Lumberjack Festival year after year in the blinding sun, judgingly along, making a lot of judgments. So that was, it gets so hot out there sometimes. So now we're not exactly blood brothers, but it feels a bit. So when I heard that they were doing this big thing at his Mexican restaurant, Pajarito, this place in St. Paul, so such good tacos, such good everything. When I heard that they're bringing in Justin Carlisle, who's one of the great, great chefs of the region, he's in Milwaukee. When I heard Justin Carlisle was going to be in their restaurant, I wanted to have Tig here because that's pretty cool. Justin Carlisle is a big deal. I mean, you're a big deal, but he's also a big deal.
Nowhere as big a deal as he is, for sure. Absolutely.
So tell me about this. You're 2 years into having your own restaurant.
Yeah. It's been 2 years. It's it's like having kids. It's the longest 2 years and the shortest 2 years all in the same time. So
because you were knocking around all kinds of restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you put in some time. Chino Latino.
Yep.
I remember when you were at something that forgettably named The Inn.
The Inn for a hot minute.
That was a great restaurant that had no chance ever.
It was a tough spot, but...
And so this has been like your baby, your first time for your own baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, my partner Steve and I, we're still kind of in the thick of it day to day, kind of in the trenches. So people
are wondering, what's it like to go make that leap from chef to owner?
Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
Still?
Not so much anymore. We have our groove and, have moved on from that. But, that initial... kind of jump into the deep end was scary for sure.
And worth it?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's kind of that, that it's better to work 80 hours for yourself than 40 hours for somebody else kind of a thing. So So, oh, yeah.
And so now you're capping it all off. Big celebration. How did you and Justin Carlisle, who's just really, you know, James Beard Award winner, very famous, how did you guys kind of connect?
You know, honestly, my my partner, Steve, actually had followed him on Twitter for a while, and just kind of on a random thing, we had been talking about doing something for our second anniversary, and he just kind of hit him up on Twitter, and rest is history. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Finally. It was just kind of a chance. A
sign that the social media is making the world better, not the world worse.
Yeah, exactly.
And so what are you going to do?
So we're going to be doing kind of a combination of a couple different restaurants that Justin's got. He's got a ramen restaurant called Red Light Ramen and also a place called Laughing Taco. So we're going to be kind of doing a combination of ramen and tacos for this pop-up. So
it's very now, but also how does that even work?
You know, I'm not really sure. You know, we're kind of winging it, but I think it's going to be a good time. It kind of gives us a chance to, you know, do something that we're not doing every day. And, yeah, just kind of...
Are they side by side, or are you just going to throw the tacos in the ramen? How's it?
Yeah. No, we're not going to be doing any kind of fusion, anything like that. So it'll be kind of a side by side. So we'll have kind of a ramen section, taco section, and then kind of some side dishes that'll kind of cover both sides of that.
All right, I'm going to put a link to on my page for your Pajarito Turns 2 events, but we have some extra time. So tell me, you're a real Minnesotan. What did you do for Thanksgiving?
You know, I'm kind of a traditionalist when it comes to Thanksgiving. You know, I am a big turkey and stuffing and, you know, green bean casserole kind of a fan. So it was basically just with family. That was about it. So.
How do you do the green? Where are you in the green bean casserole spectrum? Do you start fresh? Do you start with canned?
Fresh green beans, but then, you know, kind of all the canned other stuff that goes along with it. So
is a controversy that's been bubbling around.
Yep.
Some people say that some people are saying that Campbell's cream of mushroom soup is the American bechamel. Where do you fall on that?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I think it's kind of one of those things. It's definitely a utility kind of a thing.
It is a utility kind of thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that, you know, you can use it here and there and not really have it be a standout ingredient, kind of have it blend in someplace. So I'm for using it, you know.
Yeah, there are a bunch of those products that I think are great. The Durky canned onions. Like, have you ever seen one of these Thomas Keller recipes where he basically has you, you know, frying shallots with chopsticks for, you know, 100 hours? Like, that's too hard. Like, that's too much work.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, in a pinch at home, I think they definitely have their place for sure. So,
yeah. I think so. So what else is going on? So you had 2 years. St. Paul is changing. Dare I ask you about the $15 minimum wage? Because I am just hearing some gloom and doom from people. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, you know, I'm not really sure. It'll be interesting to see how it works out kind of moving forward.
I was talking to a chef the other day who said that there's not going to be a couple of these positions in kitchens that people don't, you know, just like average consumer maybe doesn't think about. So somebody like a food runner. So a food runner is there to take some pressure off the staff and make sure that anything comes up in the window, you know, gets to the table hot.
Yep.
He said that we're going to see the end of food runners. And then there's another position called an expediter. An expediter is someone who stands in the kitchen and helps the kitchen kind of organize workflow in the most optimal way. He said that we're going to see the end of food runners and expos. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think that, that's potentially a possibility. I think that, you know, to go along with that, it would be also, you know, where you'd have people kind of multifunction, you know, as far as food runners and stuff like that. You know, we, you know, at Pajarito, we actually will kind of utilize a server. So they'll have a kind of a separate shift as doing that in the restaurant. So that kind of helps to alleviate having to hire somebody on
to do that. They'll do what, the food running?
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. So they'll have, you know, they'll have maybe one shift a week where, you know, they'll have they'll work a food running shift. You know, generally we only run a food runner on a busy night, you know, Fridays and Saturdays, or if there's an event or something like that. But, you know, most of those shifts are covered by servers, you know, to kind of help share the weight, I guess, a little bit.
And so the other thing I'm seeing is I'm seeing a lot of service charges coming down the pike. People are very, you know, putting 2% for healthcare, 3% mm-hmm. for healthcare. You don't do that at Pajarito yet.
We don't. Not yet. I mean, I don't know if it's something that we would, you know, potentially do in the future. You definitely are seeing a lot of that around.
When I talk to restaurant people, they're saying, you know, they're getting kind of this legislated from the top, but they're, you know, no one's really asking them how their businesses work and how this is going to work and whether, you know, the food costs are going to make sense for all of this at the end of the day. What do you think of, you know, as you're running a restaurant for 2 years, you started in mm-hmm. one climate, mm-hmm. it's sort of morphing over to something else. How is that?
I don't know. I mean, I think that it's going to kind of, it's going to be something that we're going to kind of have to wait and see, you know, just kind of see how it works. You know, we haven't really discussed it yet. I mean, it's still pretty new in St. Paul, so.
Well, it's not even here yet.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I feel like a lot of, you know, it came to Minneapolis first, and then all of a sudden we had this big restaurant boom in St. Paul.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
now it's coming to St. Paul. So it's a very... It's something that's going mm-hmm. on, and I understand, you know, you kind of can't deal with it until you have to deal with it.
Yeah.
But it's complicated.
It is. It's very complicated. You know, I mean, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how it affects restaurants, you know, if people are going to be sticking with full service or if they're going to go kind of fast casual, kind of a quick service,
Have you ever talked about that?
As far as doing something like that, not yet, no. You know, I mean, that might be a discussion that we have in the future, but I mean, as of right now, we're just going to kind of keep going the way we're going. So,
yeah, I do not like these experiments with fast casual. There's this place in South Minneapolis. It's called the, The Tap House over on 46th and Grand. And
yeah.
they have basically done away with servers. You kind of come in, you put your credit card into a system, mm-hmm. and then you just use iPads. And then
yep.
if somebody runs a food, it feels like you're in an abandoned library or something. Like it doesn't feel
like
a restaurant.
That. Yeah, yeah, I could see that. So.
And then if you know, I had a friend who went there with me and she managed to mess up, you know, the first time you use this wine system that mm-hmm. kind of, you know, you put your credit card in and it spurts out wine. Like she couldn't make it stop. It turned into this kind of, you know, Willy Wonka thing where
yeah.
and then she's getting charged for a, you know, 11 ounce pour or something, mm-hmm. which nobody would want. And it's, it's, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it's going to be interesting to see kind of how it affects, you know, restaurants going forward. And I mean, if people are going to take those costs and just kind of work them into the, you know, the daily operations, or if it's going to be something where they're going to be going more of a fast casual kind of a thing. So
yeah, we're in a time of big transition that way.
Definitely, definitely.
And a lot of people have been, you know, last year the big problem was that it was hard to find employees. Are mm-hmm. you finding it?
Yeah. You know, it's, I think that's still kind of an issue. And I mean, everybody is always looking for people. You know, that's kind of what the business is now, is that, you know, instead of being able to find somebody who, you know, might have 5 or 6 years experience, you're taking somebody with 1 or 2 years experience, but then, you know, having to kind of, you know, show them the ropes with how kind of, you know, you operate and you do things at your restaurant. So,
yeah, I'm hearing that too. I was talking to somebody the other day and he was saying, you know, he can't get a young cook to stay on a station for a year the way he used to be able to. They kind of feel like, oh, I did this for 3 months, I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of that for sure. So, I think a lot of places, they kind of keep their, try to keep their core people, you know, whether 2, 3, 4 people, and then, you know, they kind of use them to kind of help with the training of new people coming in. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely kind of a constant rotation nowadays for sure.
Well, it's a great time to get in the restaurant business if you want rapid advancement.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right. So now that you've been at Pajarito for a couple of years, tell me about kind of refining the restaurant. It feels like am I right in saying the menu's gotten a little more focused and a little smaller over the years?
It has gotten a little bit smaller. I mean, not a significant amount. You know, I mean, you're always trying to, you know, kind of refine things and kind of make things better. And
I like a shorter menu. I find, you know, once you get into a diner and you're just like flipping page after page.
Yeah.
One of my big pet peeves is the restaurants are like, we have the best pancakes, the best ribs, and the best tamales in town. It's like, no, you don't. It's
yeah.
not possible.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, we, like I said, I mean, we try to refine and try to, you know, just get better every day. I mean, I think that's, you know, all restaurants try to do that, or at least, you know, good ones. you know, instead of just kind of sitting back and you know, kind of relying on past history and past experience and past success.
And now that you've been cooking some of your recipes for a couple years, I'm thinking about some of the salsas. Like, do you get like a deeper feeling for them?
Oh, absolutely. For sure. You know, you can kind of, yeah, you kind of know how, you know, if things don't quite go right, you know, how to, you know, kind of bring them back or make them, you know, what they should be. But yeah, I mean, I think you definitely, you gain a kind of a knowledge of how they work kind of day to day. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like the first time you cook anything, it's an experiment in some way. You know, you don't quite know. And even the first couple of times, but, you know, the 1,000th time, the 2,000th time,
yep,
you really
know. Do it in your sleep kind of a thing, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. It changes it. It makes mm-hmm. it, you can taste that it's more, you know, unified professional.
Yep.
Approached more deeply.
Absolutely, absolutely. So.
All right, well, yeah. We only have another minute. Thank you for coming in today. So this has been Tig Nelson from Pajarito. Putting a link up to their big 2-year anniversary pop-up with this famous chef, Justin Carlisle. Tig, before I let you go, what is the best leftover of Thanksgiving?
You know, I'm kind of a stuffing guy.
It has to be stuffing.
Yep.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
And my mom used to take stuffing and then, like, throw it in a pan and heat it up then and then crack an egg in with there.
Yeah.
That's a thing. That's a good thing.
I kind of like to get a little trashy with it and do some, you know, kind of inexpensive white bread and probably the one time of the year that Miracle Whip is acceptable.
Oh, stuffing sandwich?
Little stuffing sandwich, little Miracle Whip and a little bit of turkey. So
and maybe next year they'll do a pop-up. Just be like, leftovers like a chef does it.
Yeah.
You'd have a big line.
Yeah, you'd have like 2 days worth of people not being or being sick of it. So, yeah.
All right, Tig Nelson for Pajarito. Thanks for coming in. And
thanks for having me.
All the things. All right, we come back. We're going to have Mr. Andrew Zimmern. We're going to find out about his great work raising money for hunger charities when we come back. Well, guess who's on the line? It's Andrew Zimmern, Minnesota's best favoritest, most beloved food personality. He's been on the television. Now he's making egg rolls. Oh, I think you're making egg rolls. I'm trying to give you a space. Andrew Zimmern, are you making egg rolls?
You know, Sam, we actually had the egg roll conversation yesterday. They're not on the menu, but we have two big PDRs, that private dining rooms, that we can open for overflow, and we're starting to book parties for much later in the year. We're going to wait a couple months before we, because it's such a large restaurant with 200 seats, you know, outside of the PDRs. We don't want to bury the kitchen, but we're starting to come up with those menus for folks for set meals and stuff. So I would imagine we are going to have a killer homemade egg roll that people can have when they book parties. And who knows, it might wind up on the menu. We do shrimp toast.
Ooh,
that's
shrimp
about
toast.
Yeah, but it's in a roll form. It's actually one of my favorite dishes on the menu. We stuff the shrimp farce inside a tube of bread before it's fried, and it is attic. It's one of our more popular items.
It's
a killer.
Oh, so a little Southern. So you're doing an interesting thing. So you're kind of, I have long said that like these kind of new cuisines, like Italian-American food. Italian-American food is its own thing and it should be proud, and I'm proud of it and
yep.
I love it and people
yep.
love it. And so you, like, I think that the whole effort to make a, you know, an authentic restaurant like this, some village somewhere, is just it's so phony. You
yep.
just can't do it. It's inevitably dumb and kind of pretentious. And I love that you're having nothing to do with that.
Yeah, you know, and there, I mean, look, there are some people in mostly in other cities, especially when it comes to Chinese cuisine, who can cook from their family's playbook and represent one specific town or piece of a region and really do something personal.
You don't have the right river. You don't have the, you know, like there's.
Well, there is that. But, you know, I mean, you know, look at what Pim is doing with Kin Kao in terms of Thai food, you know, in San Francisco. You know, so, you know, you can get there. But for me, my big thing, and you and I are two peas in a pod on this issue, Chinese-American food has been cooked since the 1860s here in America. It's its own cuisine. Italian-American food, same deal. You know, meatballs in Italy never come on pasta. It's a primi. It's a first course. It's a little taste. So many of the dishes that most Americans consider to be Chinese or Italian or Mexican are in fact Mexican-American or Tex-Mex or Italian-American or Chinese-American. And those foods have been cooked for so long here. And in many regions, in the case of Mexican food, in places like Texas, which actually was Mexico at one point in time.
It gets so complicated. I mean, what would even authentic Mexican be? Is that before Columbus arrived? I mean, it's like
you got it. You hit the nail on the head. Then there's the whole colonial experience. So what we're trying to do here at Lucky Cricket is, you know, we're taking the foods that I love to eat, some of which are very micro-regional, some of which are very, very honest and authentic, as it were. Some come straight from some of my favorite restaurants in Hong Kong, Shanghai, Flushing, Queens. Others are interpretive. Others are Chinese-American classics. And we've put it together because it's the food I love to eat. And I think Minnesotans, if I'm cooking in my hometown for my home, you know, people, should be eating the food that I want to serve. I just think that that's the artistic expression, right? It's, you know, cook what you know and cook what you love, and then start thinking about the commerce side of the stuff once the artist's itch is scratched.
Yeah, it's that writing thing. You're supposed to, you know, write for your ideal reader, who is often yourself, right? I mean, so that's, once you do that, maybe the world beats a path to your door. And
I thought I was your muse. I thought you wrote to, so that I liked it.
Oh, sugar, I will send you some manuscripts. If that's the direction, you got some free time, you're on a plane, I can get you to read some stuff. It's deep.
Anytime. But yeah, I mean, you know, Lucky Cricket is a very, especially, you know, the food is a very personal expression. And even though I haven't, you know, been drinking for 27 years, my favorite drinking experience as a young person, especially with Chinese food, was, you know, the tiki experience of, you know, Trader Vic's and some of those, you know, old-timey classics, the place where it's always permanently sunset. And so we created a big tiki lounge to go with the restaurant side of things. And, you know, so far, so good. People are loving it.
Yeah, we used to go to some place. My mom was, you know, my mom had an event at night. My dad did not cook for children. That was not a thing for him. And so he would take us to the neighborhood Chinese restaurant that was, you know, just red everything, you know, red walls and red ceiling, red carpet, red and gold chairs, and the big Lazy Susan in the middle. And, it's such a good feeling for me. I used to love that and just get all of that 1970s good Chinese food. It was a beautiful moment in time.
It certainly was.
All right, and so now I want to ask you about some other stuff. So you've seen people all over the world. You've been involved with people's food. You're now in a universe where you have, you know, a lot of food. You got cases of broccoli coming in the door. But you also have always kept hunger and hunger charities and helping people like close to your heart. Tell me about you and Taste of the NFL. You've been involved for a long time.
I've been involved for 7 or 8 years, on the board, I think, for 5 or 6. About that time, about 6 years ago, we made a company decision at our three businesses that we were going to spend 25% of our time and 25% of our money on charitable endeavors. I have long been of the opinion that for those who have been given much, much is expected. I have said out loud many times, for those that have a large platform, you should be using it for good. And so whether it's Services for the Underserved in New York, Partnership for Drug Free America, Love and Spoonfuls, a food rescue org in Boston, Appetite for Change, where I'm on the advisory board here in the Twin Cities, and, you know, Second Harvest Heartland. There are places that I've dedicated a lot of time and energy, Taste the NFL being a big one. We, you know, have events all year long in the NFL cities. It culminates on Super Bowl Eve with the big Party with a Purpose, where 6,000-7,000 people gather, hundreds of active players and Hall of Famers and chefs from every NFL city cooking a lot of great food. And we raise a lot of money millions and millions of dollars every year for hunger relief in the NFL cities. We just hand over checks to food shelves in those NFL cities. It's been an incredible experience. We do a lot of Taste of the Vikings events, several all throughout the fall and into the playoffs, and in the spring as well. We do dinners out of season celebrating our football team and raising money for charity. It just is something that, maybe because I learned a long time ago that when I'm in my own head and I'm worried too much about myself, the only thing that helps me stay right-sized is to do service work. And so I try to make sure that, 25% of my day is spent on it. I break it down that way, because otherwise 25% of my year won't be spent on it. And it seems to work. So far, so good. And I love the good works. Taste the NFL started here
27 years ago, yeah, with Wayne Pastrowski.
Super Bowl, mm-hmm. Yeah, and Humanitarian of the Year James Beard Award winner Wayne Pastrowski. And it just was something that I felt was important for me to be a part of, and it's there's not a day goes by I regret it.
I did not realize that you were doing 25% a day. Ask a busy person if you want to get something done, I guess.
Well, people say, how do you do it? And, if you say, oh, this is what I'm going to do every year, I don't know how to do anything over the course of the year. I am a one day at a time person. So I know if I'm active for 10 hours a day, I can take, 2.5 hours and make sure that I'm working on charitable efforts. And most days that's, the actual work of being a board member, or being active in organization, emails, organizing, event planning, scheduling. A lot of days it's actually being active. I'm going to New York in, a week or so, and I'm spending 3 days, and I'm cooking 3 charity dinners that we gave away at other people's, events. And I'm doing 3 Chinatown tours, where, it's the typical go on a eating tour of 3 or 4 restaurants with Andrew Zimmern that we gave away at some of my events. So some days it's a little more than that, because some days there's nothing. I need a day off every once in a while. But the only way to do it is one day at a time. For anyone, I heard someone talk once about writing. And they said the only way to be a writer is to do it for a couple hours every day. Just get up in the morning and do it. I've taken that to heart when it comes to getting anything done.
Yeah, and then sometimes you need a day off, and then it's complicated. Well, you know what? We're so lucky to have you in the Twin Cities. All right, Andrew Zimmern, I'm going to let you go. Congrats on Lucky Cricket. Thank you for all the work you do for Taste of NFL and the Kick Hunger Challenge. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much, my friend. I appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.